Good morning. I call this meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, March 17th, 2026. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and the time is 8:03 a.m. Members present are Representative Kai Holland, Representative G. Nelson, Representative Steve St. Clair, Representative Carolyn Hall, Co-Chair Donna Mears, and myself, Co-Chair Rebecca Himshute. We have a quorum to conduct business. I'd like to remind members and staff to please silence your cell phones. And before we get started, I'd like to thank our recording secretary, Sophia Tenney. And helping us from the Juno LIO is Susan Quigley. On today's agenda, we have three items. We're going to do HB 216, transfer of railroad land to Whittier, followed by HB 309, Jonesville public use area, including public testimony, and then HB 377, public records, audio and video, municipal costs. And then that should be enough for this day. On HB 216, it's our first item on the agenda, transfer of railroad land to Whittier by Representative Holland. This is the third hearing on HB 216. I want to let members know that we did not receive any amendments by the deadline. Representative Holland and Aiden Nickel, please come forward and you can maybe provide a brief recap, and we'll see if there are any committee questions, or we can do it from right here if you'd like. And I'd like to also welcome Representative Prox at 8:04. So, Representative Holland, do you want to make any comments on the bill?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Himshute. Just briefly, this bill has been heard. We have considered any changes, and we're ready to move this out. As background, this bill essentially authorizes but does not require the Alaska Railroad and the City of Whittier to enter into an agreement for the sale and transfer of some railroad land to the City of Whittier. This is a effort that has been going on for a couple of years to try and complete this transfer, and this is a willing agreement between the city and the railroad that both mutually want to proceed with this transfer. More specifically, the bill authorizes the sale and transfer of five parcels. At this point, the city and the railroad have reached an agreement on three of those five, but they wish to have the other two in this legislation in order to preserve the ability for them to complete the work on the additional two parcels at some point in the future if they wish, but again, they're not required to. As background, the railroad transfer to Alaska back in the 80s created in statute the requirement that the legislature would have purview over any release of the railroad of their land that they received in that transfer to some other party. So it's a legislative step that we have to approve these transfers. It's a procedural one. It was last done a couple years ago with the city of Nenana that entered into an agreement with the railroad for some land. So we're essentially following that same procedure of providing due diligence and public awareness of this transfer. Again, this is a willing agreement between the parties. It's a legislative requirement that we provide this authorization. It does not actually require anything to be done, but the parties are willing and need our authorization for them to go to the next step. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Okay. Representative Prox.
I just wanted to, thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to offer a conceptual amendment. Change the name from Whittier to Cordova on page 1, line 9, and on page 2, line 28, change ferry system to ferry system from railroad.
I'll object to that conceptual amendment.
Almost got it through.
Dang.
Would you like to speak to your amendment?
No, I think we'll leave it at that.
In that case, the amendment is not adopted.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Great. So seeing no additional questions or conceptual amendments, I will... Okay. So the amendment was not only not adopted, it was withdrawn.
It was withdrawn.
I apologize. I didn't hear that part. Thank you, Patrick. Okay. Seeing no additional questions or amendments, I will entertain a motion.
I move HB 216, Work Order 34-LS0946/A from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Seeing no objection, HB 216, Work Order 34-LS0946/A moves from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations. We'll do a quick at ease to do the paperwork. At ease. Representative Nelson and staff Catherine Covey, you could, I guess, just available for questions. Representative Nelson, is there anything you would like to add or recap on this bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I wanted to clarify the two sections that we were talking about. And so the section in Area 15 that we had discussed is known as Coyote Lake, and Jillian Morrissey from the borough sent in a clarifying email that's also on the record in basis. But that section 15 is actually not state ground. And once again, to keep in mind, this is not a transfer of land at all. So this is a piece of ground that was originally included that has been owned by the borough since 1986. So that's why that one's getting removed from the public use area, because the Jonesville public use area is just another layer of management that the state is giving the borough. So that's why 15 is being removed, because it's not actually owned by the state. Does that make sense?
I want to make sure I understand that. So it was included accidentally.
Erroneously, yes.
Okay. But the land actually belongs to?
The Mat-Su borough.
So having it included in the Jonesville public use area is technically not even possible, because the public use area is a state designation.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So that was an error on the original bill. And so nothing will change as far as the actual management of the land by the borough. It will continue to function and provide the same recreational opportunities that it has since 1986. So that's on Section 15. That's why that section is getting removed from the Jonesville Public Use Area map. And then Section 21, which was the one that we are adding, I hope that the letter from the borough manager explained it somewhat, and I was trying to make rounds yesterday, and it was just, I got a little slammed on it. But once again, just to reiterate, there are two entries into this particular area that would fall under the Jonesville public use area, and it's essentially one big parking lot. And on the maps in that section 21, you can see in Section 16, which you should have a printout of, just right up above Section 21, there's a little red line, and that is the second entrance that goes in. And by not including that quarter section, once again, it essentially, that entire area where most of the recreation happens and camping and that entire area is essentially cut in half. The road going into it is included, but the actual area where people camp is not included, or was not included and should have been originally. That quarter section in Section 2119 North 03 E21. So that's why that quarter section is being added. And then I thought that Rep. Holland had a great point about local support, and we have lots of letters in the original bill, and then the one that was sent in from the borough manager, I think, clarified that this is something that they desire as well, so we're not just shoving it down their throat. Good point.
Okay. With all of that said, we also have online for questions Rachel Longacre, Division of Operations Manager, Division of Mining. I think Operations Manager, Division of Mining, Land and Water at the Department of Natural Resources. So are there questions from the committee? Okay. Seeing no questions, we're going to go ahead and open public testimony. And I don't see anyone online to testify. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Okay, seeing no one, we're going to close public testimony. And are there any additional committee questions before we set this bill aside? Representative Holland.
Great, thanks. First off, to Representative G. Nelson, thank you for the clarification on the removal. That's really important information and very helpful to understand that, as well as the letter and the support that's there. I'm just kind of generally curious, as we look at this bill and its impact on the public use area, are there any other issues specifically related to the public use area and its management that have been issues that we should be aware of or taking up as a part of this bill, looking at the boundaries and this public use area? I'm not that familiar with public use areas. I'm just kind of curious, but not necessarily going anywhere. I'm just, if there's anything else we needed to deal with because this bill is available, just asking.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The only thing that I can think that potentially might come up somewhere down the road is that this also falls under, it's a moose range, and it also has active mining leases. And so those take precedent. This is not something that we can address in this bill. Those are actually laid out in statute. And so just to answer your question, honestly, at some point there might be some conflict there that we might have to deal with, but it's not anything that we can address in this bill, which is the property lines.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Prox.
Well, just to confirm that.
Careful.
Yes, right. The various agencies have reviewed this and dotted the I's and crossed the T's. That's.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, and once again, the majority of that work was done back in 2017-18 and in the decade leading up to that. Obviously, they might have crossed a few I's and dotted a T, which is what we're addressing right now. But, yeah, absolutely, everybody has been in absolute vocal support. And it's been something that when I was on the community council, we were having monthly meetings with the borough and DNR. And so it is, as far as minus these two little parcels and the things that can be addressed, we've double-checked everything.
Okay.
I'm going to take that question to Rachel Longacre, who is mm-hmm. online. So, Ms. Longacre, could you put your name on record and just confirm the either involvement of the department or support of the department for this bill?
Yes, good morning. Rachel Longacre, Chief of Operations for the Division of Mining, Land, and Water within DNR. Yes, we absolutely support this boundary change. These were boundaries that we had communicated with, at the time, Representative Rauscher. Somewhere between all the agencies, there was an error in the boundary, and this would correct it. We are absolutely in support.
Okay.
Thank you for that. Are there any final questions before we set this bill aside? Okay. Great. We're going to move along then in our agenda to HB 377. This is the final item on our agenda today and the first hearing for HB 377, Public Records, Audio and Video Muni Costs. I would like to invite Representative Carrick and Staff Stuart Relay to the table to introduce the bill. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, members of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Ashley Carrick, representative for House District 35 in West Fairbanks, and here with my staff today, Stuart Relay. House Bill 377 comes at the direct request of our city of Fairbanks and is a local priority for our community. And just in brief, it's a two-part bill that provides conforming language to add audio and video recording under the list of what's in the Alaska Public Records Act. And it also provides, in its substance, an exemption from the five-hour rule, as it's known, within the Alaska Public Records Act for municipalities. There are current exemptions which exist to the five-hour rule, and so this legislation would add municipalities to that list. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to my staff, and we have a brief presentation, which also includes a little bit more thorough sectional analysis as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Stuart Relay, staff for Representative Carrick. Thank you for having us today. Just to walk through the presentation here on House Bill 377, to kind of provide some more information on what Representative Carrick said as a brief overview of the bill, it updates the definition of public record in the State Records Management Act, which is Section 1 of the bill, and the Alaska Public Records Act, which is Section 3 of the bill, to specify that audio and video records are included as public records. That's just a suggested change by legal to update the definition. Section 2 of the bill is kind of the meat of the bill, if you will, and it establishes an exemption from the five-hour rule for municipalities. This will allow municipalities to collect fees on the production of public records to recoup actual personnel costs, which is a defined term. Kind of diving more into what the five-hour rule is, it is established as part of the Alaska Public Records Act. It specifies that if someone requests a public record that takes more than 5 hours to produce in 1 month, that person must pay a fee. And so essentially what happens is if the record you request requires less than 5 hours in 1 month to produce, it's free. There are several exemptions to the 5 hour rule, which I will go into on the next slide. The existing exemptions are established, and they are for the Bureau of Vital Statistics and the Library Archives in the Department of Education. They are for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development for matters relating to banking, securities, and corporations, the Board of Regents for the University of Alaska, the Alaska Railroad Corporation, and the Judicial Branch. Now, why do we want a new exemption for municipalities? Again, that's established in Section 2 of the bill, and it gives municipalities the authority to charge a fee for the actual personnel costs of producing public records. It specifies that personnel costs may not exceed the actual salary and benefit costs for the personnel time required to produce the public record, and it also requires the requester to pay the costs before the records are disclosed and allows municipalities to require payment in advance of search. Why is this exemption necessary? As will be demonstrated by the invited testimony we have from our friends in the city of Fairbanks, the five-hour rule can be taken advantage of, and in this case specifically, it can be taken advantage of by folks that are social media content creators that like to use police body cam footage to make a cool video. And that is the most common type of request the Fairbanks Police Department receives. It's a very time-consuming process because they have to go through all the redactions to make sure personal identifiers are protected and, you know, nobody's personal information's out there. Allowing cost recovery for the actual personnel costs will allow municipalities around the state to recoup the cost of public records production. And also I would note that municipalities are not required to impose the fee. This bill does nothing to change the authority that exists in the Public Records Act that allows fees to be waived. So we're allowing them to charge the fee. We are not requiring them to charge the fee. And just in conclusion, just kind of to recap again what the bill does, it's two parts. It modernizes the definition of what a public record is, and it provides an exemption to the five-hour rule. I would note that this legislative priority has received bipartisan support back home in Fairbanks. Our previous mayor and our current mayor have requested this in the past couple of years. I'm happy to take any questions. We do also have two invited testifiers. One is our police chief, and one is one of our city council members. Happy to take any questions.
Are there questions before we go to the invited testifiers? Okay. We will go ahead and go to invited testimony. Our first testifier is Valerie Terrien, Fairbanks City Council member. If you could please put your name on the record and provide your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Valerie Terrien. I am testifying on behalf of the City of Fairbanks City Council. This is one of our priorities that we're hoping to get passed by the legislature. Chief Ron Duthi, our Chief of Police, will also be testifying. And one of the things that we would like to add is that we need to add the words reviewing and redacting after the word copying in Section 2, striking and. So it would say perform the search, copying, reviewing, and redacting. The redacting is probably what takes the most time for our staff at the police department, and that they have to go through the entire video and make sure that there's not information that does not need to be provided to the public. We have right now two personnel to do that job, And one of the reasons that we want this to be due is because our budget is very tight. And as Mr. Riley said, the legislature has already recognized quite a few of exemptions, and we would just like to have municipal governments also be exempted so we can charge when necessary and waive it when needed. I know that Chief Ron Dupuy of the City of Fairbanks Police Department will also be testifying, and this is something that is just not for the City of Fairbanks, but would be for all of the municipalities throughout the state. And right now, the law forces us to provide up to 5 hours without a fee, no matter what it's taking to go ahead and provide that. And, you know, we also have to update our hardware and subscription services from time to time. And because the staff manually has to reconcile their hours, it's sometimes hard to administer, and some requesters submit information under different names, so it may be impossible to determine enforcement. So we're hoping that the House will go ahead and support this. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
I'm going to ask if you could stay on the line, or I guess we have a question right now. Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you, through the chair. I've got a couple questions I think are appropriate for somebody with the knowledge of the city specifically to answer. They generally relate to the time and effort that is required for the processing. And I'm curious, at this point in time, how much time is generally required for these requests? What's the burdened cost of the staff that would be applicable to these requests? And given that folks may be asked to pay before the request is processed, do you have a thought on how you'll handle determining how much to charge people before the request has actually been processed, given what sounds like some uncertainties about the review and redacting process? So a couple questions just about scoping the time and effort and cost that somebody might see in these requests now under this new under 5 hour situation.
Ms. Therrien, can you answer that?
Thank you, Representative Collins. And it may be that Chief Ron Dupuy might be able to answer those questions better than I do, because he supervises the individuals that do this preparation for the requesters. So I would defer to him, okay?
Okay. To the chair, then I'll just hold my questions until after the chief's testimony.
Okay.
So that he can go ahead and proceed with the plans, and then we'll pick it back up again.
Sounds great. Any other questions for Ms. Therrien? Okay, and I'd like to ask you to stay online, Councilmember Therrien, and we'll possibly come back to you. But we'll move on now to our other invited testifier, which is Chief Ron Dupuy, Fairbanks Police Department. Chief Dupuy, if you could put your name on the record and begin your testimony.
Yes, my name is Ron Dupuy. Last name is D-U-P-E-E. I've been with the City of Fairbanks for 21 years. I've been the chief for the last 5 years. And this problem has really crept up over the last probably 5 to 10 years with the onset of social media and these public records. Obviously, the state statutes don't define where audio and video recordings fall, and so this bill helps to clarify that, where they fall at in the public records. And then, as everybody else has stated, the review and redaction time for the City of Fairbanks is it's just atrocious. For every minute of video that we have, it takes our evidence custodians 4 minutes to redact. So if you have an hour video and we're redacting the entire thing to put out, for a records request, it takes them 4 hours to do that redaction because they can only do one redaction at a time, either the audio or the visual. And so they have to go at a super slow rate. And it, you know, if they're blocking out somebody's face, they put that the cursor in there. They block out the video, and then they walk through it frame by frame to make sure that that face, or you know, if somebody's ID is on a body camera, or registration information, any of that stuff is redacted. Then they have to go back through and do the audio the same way. So as you can imagine, this is a quite a time consuming process. Especially, obviously, the majority of people that are filing these records requests from social media companies are doing so in vast amounts. So right now, Midwest Public Safety is one of the is a huge company that's been filing requests. We have 55 requests from them right now. For different incidents, different body camera video, car camera video. And so when you take an incident, say just a regular DUI would take an officer roughly 3 hours to do from the time that they make the stop to the time that they book him into the jail. Well, you not only have the officer's body camera video, you have any assisting officer's body camera video, and you have a car camera or two car cameras, depending on how many people show up. So you can see if it's hour for hour, or if it's 4 hours for every 1 hour of redaction, you can see how just a simple DUI would take us, you know, almost an entire day or over an entire day just to come up with that. And then a lot of times what happens is we come up with a figure to address the question that was given previously. We are required, if there's going to be a fee, we're required to provide an estimate cost prior to putting all that stuff out. So our evidence custodian then has to go through all of the records, determine what is, you know, what's releasable, what's not releasable. The time that it's going to take, he has to do a calculation on what he thinks it's going to take him to redact all that that evidence or the audio video, and then provide that to the customer. And so he spends quite a bit of time just to do those, especially when you have 55 requests from one company. Really, what we're trying to do is, with this, it would allow us just to recoup the costs of our evidence custodian doing his job, you know, doing those records requests, doing the reviewing and redaction on these, and being able to put it out.
Okay.
I'm open if you have any other questions.
Okay. Thanks for your testimony. We do have some questions, so who's first? Okay, Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you very much, Chief, for your time and for your testimony. I'm curious, when it comes to the cameras and the videos that you were mentioning, does that also include exterior cameras, perhaps on the outside of the Fairbanks Police Department?
Yes, we do, and those we get requests for those quite often as well, and they fall in the same boat. You know, we do a lot of custody exchanges in our lobby for you know, people that are going through a divorce or something like that, and so they'll bring the kids into the lobby and they'll exchange, and you know, sometimes there's arguments or something that happens, and one side or both sides will request that. So we get those quite often as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions from the committee? Representative Holland.
Oh, great. Thank you. Through the chair, I want to pick up on where I was before. Chief, I was trying just to learn a little bit more about what the burden cost is for the personnel that are performing this function and what the average time would be of processing a request that would fall under this.
Chief Dupuy?
Yes. So I can't say that there's an average for each request, because each one is going to be different depending on how much material that we have. If we have 5 hours of video, like you said, it's a 4-to-1 ratio. And what we end up finding is, so we'll put together a cost estimate for the individual. Say, okay, they want, everything related to this DUI. And so we put a cost estimate together. The evidence custodian goes through that. And these can take some time to put the cost estimate together. So he may spend an hour just doing that cost estimate and provide it to them. Well, then when they find out that, this whole thing is going to cost me X amount of dollars, maybe I don't want that. I just want the initial contact by the officer, the arrest, and then the data master processing, and then him booked into jail. And so they'll cut it down. And then it'll be up to our evidence custodian to go in and snip those pieces out of the video and provide that, redact it, and then provide it. So I don't know if that helps answer the question.
Some follow-up, please. Thank you for that information. Currently, I'm assuming, but please correct me, that if it's over 5 hours, you are already able to charge for this work. It sounds like this bill is clarifying and opening up the ability to charge for less than 5 hours. But it sounds like most or many of these requests might be larger. So I'm curious how many requests come in at this threshold that this would now allow you to start charging for what you haven't been able to charge already?
Chief Dupuy?
Yes. I don't have the exact numbers for you, but, I mean, we get thousands of requests a year for public records. Like I said, we just received 55 requests from one agency, or from one entity. Now, when they say Midwest Public Safety, they may have 4 or 5 different people requesting that same information. So that 5 hours goes to every individual that requests it, not necessarily the Midwest Public Safety. We just know that they're Midwest Public Safety because it's the same individuals requesting videos all the time. And really what we find happens is we do provide a cost estimate, and then individuals will redact their request to try and get under that 5 hours, so there is no cost to them. I can get you the numbers on how many we're doing that are cost versus fall within the 5 hours. I'd hate to speculate and give you a guess at this time.
Follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. One last follow-up then. The question that I'm particularly concerned about is, how does all of this affect a citizen, a resident of Fairbanks, who now, for normal reasons, would like to get access to this content? So they're involved in the accident. They want the records, or their family who's trying to sort this out. Is there a process by which Fairbanks or local municipal residents of the department have the ability to get access to this without having to potentially go through the process that's being designed, I think, to address some large-scale out-of-state media companies? That's a very different request than a citizen who legitimately wants access to the information that pertains to themselves or something of their own local interest.
Chief Dupuy, or actually we'll go to Stuart Relay in the Representative Carrick's office.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Stuart Relay, staff for Representative Carrick. Representative Holland, to your question, municipalities are allowed to waive the fees, that is in AS 4025-110 Delta, they would be more than welcome to waive the fee.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you. For the record, Ashley Carrick, West Fairbanks representative, and through the chair, Representative Holland. The other point to just emphasize again is that this had bipartisan support in two different administrations for our city of Fairbanks, and it's because of these social media content creators that are just sneaking, they're asking for redactions to get just under that threshold, and then the very next month they'll do it again, and they'll do it again, and they're profiting off of the content that the city of Fairbanks is producing for them. But when asked that same question to our city council in multiple conversations and to both of our previous mayors, the intention here is not to try to penalize the average citizen who might, as the Chief DP mentioned, you might have the custody situation with the camera in the lobby. That individual may be a one-off circumstance where they're asking for video content. The goal for both previous city mayors is not to penalize those individuals, but rather to get at this specific problem for the 0 to 5 hour time frame where you do have content creators who are coming in and asking for large volumes of content. And I don't know if that helps answer the question.
That's fine for today. Thank you.
Okay. Other committee questions? Co-chair Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. I think this is for the chief, and I think there might be a series of them, because I'd like to kind of drill down what the actual use of folks is for these services. If we're looking at non-video, at like non-body cam, non-video, and we're looking at that five-hour rule, is there a lot of requests that come in for non-video under that 5 hours?
Chief Dupuy, is that something you can respond to?
Yes, I can answer that. Yes, we get those requests all the time as well. And those ones are obviously not as complicated to fulfill. It's just a matter of going into our record system and printing it out or emailing it to the individual. And those are actually done by a different part of our team. We have a data management team that handles all of the written, anytime anybody needs a report or any from the paperwork side, that goes to our data management team, and they can print that out. And those are super quick and easy for the most part to fulfill. It's really the audio and the video stuff that creates an issue for the police department, specifically regarding the 5 hours. And I know the council has also talked about exempting city residents from those fees for the, if this goes into effect, being able to exempt residents for anything under the five-hour mark.
Curious if that would result in an equal protection issue, but Co-Chair Mears, you had a series of questions.
Thank you, Chief Dubey. That, through the chair, that's exactly what I wanted to get at, that there's just one type that we're looking at here, and we had this come up when we were looking at the budget for the Department of Public Safety as well, and then our University of Alaska has got security as well, and they've got officers as well. So I don't think this applies just to municipalities. And I apologize, Representative Carrick. I think we might blow your bill up here a little bit. But and so what I'm getting at is I'm seeing the need to maybe look just at these types of records, but make that broader. So I think that's a little bit more of a committee discussion than a question for anyone. But I think there's other questions. Let's go on to those while I formulate some additional thoughts.
Representative Hall had another question.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Chief, I'm curious, when your folks are redacting those visuals and the audio, when they're ready to render that redaction, is that included in the four minute to 1 minute ratio that you mentioned before? So, if it takes, let's say, 20 minutes or 30 minutes or maybe an hour to render that video with redactions, is that part of that ratio that you mentioned earlier?
Chief Dupuy?
I'm not sure I understand the question. So if we have a minute of video, it takes 4 minutes for the evidence custodian to redact that. When he releases it, it'll still be only 1 minute of video, but it takes him 4 minutes to redact it.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Chief, I understand that. I guess when it comes, and I have a video production background, so that's the context within which my question comes from. So when your evidence custodians are visually redacting, whether it's through a blur or a black box, that mm-hmm. edit to the video takes time to render, and basically it takes time for the computer, the program, to process and basically make that effect a part of the permanent new record. And so I'm curious, that rendering, is that included in the ratio that you mentioned earlier?
Would that be, are you asking about the time it takes the computer to do the work that's being asked of it, I
Correct.
Guess?
Correct, yes.
Chief Dupuy?
I would guess so, because we look at it as the evidence custodian's entire time. So if he's having to wait for the computer to finish rendering that video with the black box, then I would say it probably is included in that time frame.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Chief. That's kind of what I was assuming, but also, yes, because it basically not clogs up the computer, but it keeps the evidence custodian from being able to work on other visual projects because the computer is processing and doing its thing to render the new video. But at the same time, I guess, what are the evidence custodians doing during that time? Let's say you do have an hour of video and they've spent however many hours making those redactions. And let's say it's going to take maybe 3 or 4 hours to render the video. It all depends on, you know, the computer, of course, and the processing speed. But, I mean, that's time in which the evidence custodian would not be working. Technically, like, they wouldn't be in front of their computer working on the actual redaction. So I guess I'm trying to, like, pin down, I guess, when it comes to the work hours that are included. Like, can you provide some clarity on that?
Chief Dupuy?
I see what you're saying. You're saying if they do like a 2-hour redaction, then does it take the computer 2 hours to spit out the final product? So there's a total of 4 hours there. I don't believe that's the way that it works with our software. I can find out, and I'm more than happy to have our evidence custodian provide a demonstration for you as well on how that whole thing works. But if that were the case, while the second 2 hours, while the computer was doing its own thing, we have several computers in the evidence room, so he would be able to do other things. Obviously, we still have a police department. We still have evidence that comes in that has to be booked and cataloged, evidence that has to be released. So he can do those things while that video is rendering for that other 2 hours. If it's just a computer doing its thing, he's not necessarily tied to not doing anything while that's going on.
Last follow-up. Thank you for your indulgence, Madam Co-Chair. So, Chief, I think if we could have some clarity on that, that would be helpful as far as what those processing speeds are like. I mean, obviously, every video is going to be a little bit different. If there is more to redact, it's going to take longer for the computer to process and render that video. But if you could maybe give a ballpark or a range as far as, you know, how long that rendering process takes, depending on maybe it's a 1-minute video or a 30-minute video, if you could give some of that detail, that would be helpful.
And I have a few of my own questions, and I think these are mostly for the bill's sponsor. I want to start with, what is the definition of municipality? So, for example, you have first-class city and you have second-class city. I know in my region, almost every police department is using body cams now. So would municipality cover all of these places that could end up with some of these requests? And I'd like to ask the testifiers to stay online, please, because we might come back to you.
Uh,
Madam Chair, for the record, Stuart Relay, staff for Representative Carrick. We can get back to the committee, but my understanding in conversations with legal, this would apply to all local governments, including those in your region.
Okay, great. And then I guess that kind of leads to my second question. How does this apply around the state? So one thing I noticed is we're adding audio or video recording to the definition. If we didn't add that, does that mean it's not a public record and it can't be requested, which I think would be a huge can of worms? But right now, is it because of motion picture film that these are being requested? Like, under what definition are these requests being fulfilled now?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Stuart Relay. Madam Chair, those sections 1 and 3 were suggested changes by legal to add audio and video recordings. I would imagine that it would be under the motion picture film, but I can get back to the committee.
We all know a lot of cases, right, where these videos are being requested, and then there's the question of, you know, under what standards? Is it 3 days later? Is it immediate? When is this video? So we know major high-profile cases where this is happening. And so I see us only now adding audio or video recording, and it makes me wonder, like, the minutes of an assembly meeting would be an audio recording, and people have requested those forever. So anyway.
I think also to the chair, Ashley Carrick, West Fairbanks representative, the Section 3, again, Sections 1 and 3 were suggested additions by legal. I wondered that myself, and I asked the same question about motion picture film. I will also note that we have, additionally, in Section 1, photographic file, and in Section 3, just the word files. And so I imagine that our municipalities, in an effort to, keep up with the times and get into the spirit of the Alaska Public Records Act, are conforming, but I wondered that too. If we didn't take any action, there might be a legal question about whether municipalities are even required to do this in the first place. But I will say it's not my intent as the sponsor, nor do I think it's our city's intent or other municipalities to not provide this type of footage to people. And the spirit is to get at the public records request while also allowing municipalities greater flexibility to charge as needed.
Further down in Section 1, it does talk about any other material, regardless of physical form or characteristic, developed or received under law or in connection with the transaction of official business. So I think I have another question for Chief Dupuy. Something that has always bothered me is, not being an attorney or in law enforcement myself, in theory, you're innocent until proven guilty, but these videos. So what is the right to privacy of the individuals who are in these videos? And I guess my question more specifically is there some guarantee to the individual who's having this law enforcement contact that their face will be blurred, their name will be redacted? Like, you're already, I think, giving attention to this. I just want some assurance from you how that's handled.
Yes, so, this is Chief Dupuy. Our evidence custodians are familiar with all of those privacy issues, and they redact them based on those. We don't, if somebody, use my DUI example, if somebody's arrested for DUI and somebody comes in and requests that video footage, that video footage would not be allowed to be released until after they're adjudicated, means they've gone to court and either they're found guilty or not guilty or that case is completely done. As long as it's still evidence, we won't release it. So in some of these bigger cases like homicides or assaults where we have suspects or they're going to trial or we don't have a suspect yet, that stuff will not be released until after a case is adjudicated. But for the ones that are adjudicated, we do follow all of those rules. The video will be redacted accordingly.
Okay, that's great. And then I think I have one more question for you, or maybe for the bill sponsor. If there are multiple requests for the same footage, the work is done once, can you charge twice? And so if this Midwest what was it called, Midwest Public Safety requests a 10-hour period of footage, but an attorney also requests that footage. Can both entities be charged under current statute or even if we were to pass this bill?
I think that's probably a question best
suited
Okay, well, we'll go to Rep. Carrick first.
I think that's a question best suited for Chief Dupuy.
Oh, okay, and then we'll go to Chief Dupuy.
I believe if we already have the footage redacted, we just provide them with a redacted copy and we do not charge them. But I can check on that and I can get back with you.
Yeah, we might want to clarify that in the bill as well. And then, yeah, we have the definition of municipality here. Thatcher's on the spot over there, and it's a political, not that I can read his handwriting, but it's a political subdivision incorporated under the laws of the state that is a home rule or general law city, those two words. A home rule or general law borough or a unified municipality. So that seems like it captures everything. So, okay. There was another question from Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm not sure who best asked this question, if it's the bill sponsor or Ms. Therrien, but in the bill, electronic record, does that include, what does that include? Does that include text messages?
Ms. Therrien, or actually, it looks like we have an answer from the bill sponsor. Maybe we can just go to Mr. Relay.
No, I was just, I apologize, Madam Chair. I was just going to suggest directing that to Chief Dupuy.
Oh, okay. Let's redirect that to Chief Dupuy. So do you need the question again, Chief?
Yes, please.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Chief Dupuy, electronic record is mentioned in the bill. And let me just pull it up real quick here.
Page 1, lines 8 and 9.
Yep, when it defines what a record means, it includes electronic record. How do you interpret that? Does that include text messages?
Chief Dupuy?
Electronic record in the as it currently sits in the definition of record. Microphone. You know, I'm not sure what they meant by that. It's very telling in the definition though how old this language is. Microfilm, microphotography, magnetic or paper tape. Those things haven't been used in double digit years. So I believe that the audio and video just fall under, we're falling under the documents and photographs, maybe under motion picture film, but I'd have to get clarification from our legal counsel on that.
Okay. Let's go to Representative Holland.
Great. Thank you. Through the chair, and I'm not sure who to direct this question to, but I'm curious whether there's been consideration to adding on any sort of additional fee to the request. As I understand it right now, you're getting only the direct cost of the individual with their benefits for doing this, and yet it sounds like there's a tremendous amount of cost that is accumulating to process the quotes, to then potentially process the secondary follow-up quote when somebody says, slim it down for me. And, you know, from a business perspective, there's a lot of costs that are on top of somebody, whether it's the computers, the space, the supervision, so that usually the direct cost of a person is, you know, maybe half, perhaps only a third of the real cost of that person being able to do their work. And so if the intent here is to recover the cost of this effort, particularly where somebody is using this outside of our market for commercial purposes, it would seem from a business perspective I would want to burden the cost they pay, so it captured the total cost, not just the direct cost, because in essence, Fairbanks taxpayers are still subsidizing this effort by having paid for the building, the supervision, the computers, all the other software costs that are going on here. So long-winded question. Right now, I think you've tried limiting the cost of this to a fairly narrow, very direct, and that makes sense, particularly if it was somebody in the local public jurisdiction using this and you wanted to have a fair cost. But in this case, I'm wondering about an extra request fee or some other additional fee on top of the direct processing costs that might help the borough and other future municipalities recover the total cost of this effort.
And Chief Dupuy, you could respond to that, and Rep. Carrick also has a response, but I want to add to that question. My question is, somebody makes a request, you've spent the time to create the quote. Once you've created the quote and they say, yep, I want that footage, and then you do all the work, is there an opportunity for them to decline it? And you're out the work and the time. So anyway, I think we'll go first to Chief Dupuy and then to Rep. Carrick.
Okay. Yeah, there was several questions there. The first one was
additional about costs.
Additional time. I don't believe that we were looking to include any additional time. It really is just to pay for the work that is being done to provide the copy. Obviously we realize that this is transparency to the public as well. It's just something that we can't cover the cost of it on our own. And quite frankly, I don't feel like the citizens of Fairbanks should be paying for YouTuber to make money off of the videos that are all public, it's all public record. I don't think there was any thought to go any farther than just to recoup the cost for the individual doing the work.
And the second question was answered by Co-Chair Mears, because it says in statute that it will be paid in advance. So so you're not going to be out the money for the effort. So that's good news. Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Holland. I also just wanted to add that it would not be my intent to try to add into this legislation the opportunity for municipalities to make revenue on this process, because we are talking about the Alaska Public Records Act. So I appreciate your questions, because the earlier question was, why do we want this at all? And the second question is sort of, why wouldn't we want to allow for greater latitude? But I believe that this bill, with probably some edits that I'm hearing from the committee, strikes that balance where we're recouping some of the costs to municipalities and giving them greater latitude without creating a revenue structure for municipalities around Public Records Act. And I do think that's really important. My intent as the sponsor is not to create a system where, again, that example very early in the hearing, there's a custody situation and somebody's requesting that footage for their lawyer is going to be charged as a revenue measure for the city of Fairbanks. I wouldn't want to see that happen. Nor do I want these specific instances where there's many, many multiple requests to go uncharged for the cost of production. So trying to strike that balance, if that helps clarify the conversation.
We have an additional question from Co-Chair Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. So I see that I've got a couple different perspectives here. One is, when we're looking at what costs get recovered, it is sort of a public responsibility to have the infrastructure to be able to produce these requests, and that's why only the time or basically the burden costs of the personnel doing that is the recoverable piece. And so, like, the infrastructure is a public cost. And then just to address, like, doing quotes, coming from the construction background, yeah, you never pay for nobody ever pays for quotes directly. That's indirect things that happen later, which I think in this case is sort of like the infrastructure of, you know, the public service of kind of being there. But perhaps there's other areas where, you know, folks get reimbursed for quotes, but it's not the world I live in, and I don't think that's what we're looking at here either.
Okay. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. I'm not sure who to ask, but there would be, well, there is a need to clarify this and get the sideboards. I guess to Chief Dupree, do you have some written procedures for guiding you at this point or some procedures in mind so we could get kind of an idea of how that would work?
Chief Dupree?
Sure. As far as what we currently do?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I believe our evidence custodian has a list of the process for which he does all of this. He did text me back as well and about the quote. The time that it takes for him to do the quote, the only time that is charged is if we have a company or an individual that makes multiple requests throughout the time and they exceed the 5 hours, then anything after that 5 hours, he would calculate the time that he spends in doing that into the quote. But I can work on the policy and procedure that we have for our video release, and I can provide that to Representative Karen.
Okay, I think that would be good. I'm certainly understanding and appreciating the problem, and I would imagine we're talking hundreds of thousands, if not in the $1 million range, over the course of a year for larger municipalities. But there's also a lot of possibilities here for collateral damage. Should we hear from defense attorneys and traditional historical media people that are trying to do something public service? The grand case that comes to mind is the Fairbanks Four. That was decades ago now. But if an individual hadn't really taken the time to dig into that, the public would be missing kind of an important lesson.
Well, and the folks who were wrongly incarcerated.
Well, those folks too, yes.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, what,
Chair, if I may.
Sure, mm-hmm. Chief Dupree.
This Chief Dupree. So for defense attorneys, they're not charged based on this. Based on this record, it's not. They're not issuing a FOIA request. So they wouldn't be charged for any of this. As far as media. I don't believe that media is charged for the items that we give. Basically, they contact our PIO, and our PIO works with them for whatever they need as far as the media concerns. Something like the Fairbanks 4 case, that case is still an active and ongoing case. So the John Hartman murder is still an active case, so none of that would be eligible for release at this time.
Okay, and PIO is Public Information Officer.
Right.
Okay, Representative Hall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Questions, comments, all of the above. I have a really unique perspective when it comes to this bill, not only just based on my video production background, but also as a former journalist and also as a former communications director for the municipality of Anchorage. So I have seen this issue through multiple angles. And segueing from what Representative Prox mentioned, we really need to make sure that we are keeping journalists in mind, because I've had experiences where a journalist was requesting, you know, certain public records, and it was going to be cost prohibitive for them to be able to receive those records. And we really need to make sure that as part of the public process, those journalists have access to records. So I think that's something we need to be really cognizant of as far as what we're trying to achieve here with this bill. I think we also need to hear from other divisions, departments of municipalities, whether it's a clerk's office or maybe it's from a mayor's office or each, you know, just we need to have the non-law enforcement perspective shared with the committee as well. So I've seen this issue from multiple lenses, and I just hope that we take the time necessary to walk through the bill and make sure that we don't have unintended consequences, especially when it comes to public information that should be readily available for journalists upon request.
And I think the the next hearing will have more opportunities, but it's also, I just want to remind the committee that we can also do our homework outside of the committee. So Representative Carrick.
Thank you to the co-chair, and I just really appreciate this discussion today. I want to echo some of the same questions that members have, and wanted to bring this legislation forward at the request of a current present problem that seems to have gotten worse in recent years and been pretty persistent, and I imagine is pretty persistent across a lot of municipalities. Just a couple of comments. Very early on, our city councilwoman had stated that we would need to potentially add the word redaction in Section 2 just to make sure we're covering that aspect of this production. So I just wanted to offer my thoughts as the sponsor that I would be very supportive of that. I also heard support for clarifying that we're not going to charge twice for production of the same content. So if the content is already produced, not double charging a different entity for that same content. And I definitely would support clarifying that, as well as clarifying what cost recovery actually looks like and what is entailed in cost recovery. So if a computer is sitting and processing video, maybe that's not something we want to include, or maybe it is. Very open to that discussion. I also think, to Representative Hall's most recent point, that if we could potentially cite a definition of media and ensure that traditional journalistic entities are potentially exempt from the provisions of this bill, that's something as the sponsor I would support. I think what you're finding is a lot of these YouTube folks or bloggers are considering themselves media. So the challenge there is, how do we determine what media is for purposes of this legislation? And again, very open to that discussion to try to narrowly tailor it so that our Fairbanks Daily News Miner would be exempt, for example, but the Midwest News, whatever it's called, may not be, something to that effect. And I just wanted to comment that what this legislation fundamentally does is it's providing additional latitude for our municipalities. It doesn't require that cost again. And we do have a few current exemptions in statute for the five-hour rule. So the railroad, the university system, and a couple others. So this is not a new concept for providing an exemption to the five-hour rule. But I do think there's nuances involved here, especially regarding police footage, that need to be further considered. And I just appreciate the discussion.
Okay, great discussion this morning. Oh, Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Something that I was just thinking, my main concerns are also on things like that a defense or the public might need. But the question that I have, and it seems like the five-hour deal is kind of one of the main things we're getting at, is what precludes, and I guess this might be a question for Chief Dupuy or maybe the bill sponsor, because as I read it, you know, it says electronic record that's already, you know, this is already in statute, regardless of physical form or characteristic, and then once again in public records, regardless of format or physical characteristics, what precludes you from essentially doing this now? I mean, has there been a specific case? Because I mean, it seems like audio or video recordings would fit under something that is regardless of format or physical characteristics. Does that make sense?
Through the chair to Representative Nelson. So sections 1 and 3 again are just conforming language from Ledge Legal.
Mm-hmm.
Section 2 is the part that municipalities are currently not able to perform, which is this exemption on charging.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Yeah, it does. I'm with you now. Just clarifying. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Robust discussion. I want to thank both Chief Dupuy and Councilmember Therrien for your time this morning. It was a nice long session. You guys were generous with your time. Thank you. So seeing no additional questions, I'm going to go ahead and set this bill aside, and that concludes our business for today. On Thursday, we're scheduled to hear HB 282, Automated Traffic Safety Cameras, HB 255, Senior Citizen Grants Dividend Raffle, HB 286, Firefighter EMS Property Tax Exemption, HB 162, Digital Product Repair, and bills previously heard. So seeing no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 9:16 a.m.